again to everybody who's listening out there on the BT Global Challenge website. This afternoon, the plan is to go through some of the questions that have been sent in via the internet to answer them on air. So here goes with the first one, sent in from David Donaldson from the UK. And David asks, when and where on the site will you publish the winning programme number from the competition to win a day's sailing for two people, which was going to be displayed in the BT Global Challenge Centre on the 12th of July. Obviously, everybody can't be here, so I'm going to give out that winning number. And that is 476352. I repeat that for anybody who's just grabbed for a pen. 476352. So please do let us know if that was your programme number. The next winning comes in from Kevin Hanford from Southampton, and he asks, could you tell me exactly where the finish line is? Will the yachts race up Southampton Water, or will they finish where they started, in the Solent? The answer to that one is the actual finish line itself is between Dockhead and Hythe Knock Buoy. I'll just repeat that again. That's between Dockhead and Hythe Knock Buoy. The first boat currently is due in very late this evening, likely to be about midnight, and that looks at the moment to be Group 4. So we hope to see you down here, Kevin. Another very interesting one. Has been sent in by a W. Blaine Hill, and this lady or gentleman writes in as a curious sailor from Boston, USA. And the question they've sent in is, why did Toshiba and a second boat return to Boston soon after the start, then start again on the following day, then sail ahead in the race? Well, that's clearly been observed from a Boston resident. And the reason is quite clearly from this end is that what you were actually observing was a boat called Toshiba 2 and a second boat called MCI. These have actually been brought up by the two companies involved. They are the former Challenge training yachts, and they've been bought now for chartering. Now, what happened with those is that fee-paying guests have actually sailed these boats out with the fleet. That have gone out of Boston on the same day that the fleet actually headed out to see the start. They returned once the boats were actually out of the harbour head, and they actually began their sort of journey on the very following day. Then the idea was to actually sail alongside and either go ahead of the fleet, next to it, behind it, or whatever, to afford a very unique view of a racing fleet. It's not often seen, and especially so far out at sea. If you think this particular leg is about 3,000 miles long, and it is very much a one-off opportunity to know, to not only be on one of the Challenge yachts themselves, but also to observe some very close ocean racing indeed. And I'm sure that the people on board are having a very fascinating time indeed. Now to a weather question. We have a question actually that's coming from the CTY meteorology class from Maryland, again in the USA. And the question is this. We are a summer meteorology class of 11 and 12 year olds, and we are following the last leg of your race. We've read some of your log entries and noticed that many of your problems are weather related. Do you have satellite weather capabilities aboard ship, and are you able to get weather predictions or forecasts, and from whom? Well, the answer on this one is there's actually various places that we get the weather from. The main source of weather information is from the Bracknell Weather Centre here in the UK, who actually broadcast weather information to the yachts, and that's actually downloaded onto PCs and weather faxes actually on board the yachts. And it's then for the crews to actually disseminate this kind of information and to see where the next weather front's going to come in and to sail accordingly. Whilst they're going along as well, especially if the Bracknell Weather Centre signal is weak due to sort of local weather conditions, the crews can actually log into local weather stations as well throughout the world for more local information. The third way that they get their information as well is by regular weather updates from our own race headquarters that's based here in Southampton. A question about helming now from a gentleman called Geoffrey Sears, and he's from Richmond, Victoria in Australia. And he says, in following the race, I have noticed that the quality of helming varies quite a bit between the various different yachts. As in any race, keeping course is vital. My question is, do all the members of watch rotate on the helm, or is it mainly the leader of the watch or skipper? It's an interesting question, and it varies between the yachts, is the answer. The skippers and watch leaders are usually the most experienced helm and will do the majority of the helming. However, on say for example Concert, which was the boat that I was on, we actually changed around about every hour so that everybody had a go at helming, because the whole idea of this race is the full experience. Not just purely doing one job. So helming, everybody did, normally for about an hour at a time. I believe in the Southern Ocean that was cut to about half an hour because of the appalling conditions. And also it sets up a little bit of competition as well. If you imagine you've been on the helm for an hour, you log how far you've done, and the next person on will actually try and beat your time, which is clearly good for boat speed if they've all got this friendly competition between each other. There's also no sort of real point in having a specialist helmsman or anything else, because if you're not going that well and your skipper's in bed or your watch leader's doing something else, you can't wait for them to come up on deck to carry on. So it's widely expected that everybody will do every job, and that's especially on the helming. We have another one as well here from the USA, a John C. Allen from Cambridge, Massachusetts. And he says, I'm curious, by what means, vigil or otherwise, are the yachts avoiding a Titanic encounter with an iceberg, pardon the pun? And he says this must be particularly difficult in the thick fog that they've had to sail through. Clearly he's referring to the early part of leg six around Newfoundland, where the fog was particularly bad. Radar is the answer really on this one. Keeping very close watch as well on deck, but as visibility reduces, you have to rely more and more on what your radar actually tells you. And as the fleet actually went out very close with each other, then the radar is vital that that's working properly. Also, the radio reports from various boats as well. The twice daily chat show is another vital source of information. We now come on to some messages that are coming via the email to wish various boats well, and I'd like to go through one or two of these. The first one comes from the Hendrix family, again in the USA, this time from New Jersey, and they say, to Alan Sears and the Tsushima Way Warrior crew, best of luck as you approach the finish line, and remember that winning is nice, but taking part is the most important thing. John Truren sent in a well-wishing message to Commercial Union, and he says, hello Nick, best of luck for the last bit of the leg. We're in Ocean Village looking forward to your safe return. I will order the beer, see you soon. I think that's clearly a sentiment that would go out to a lot of people. Another one here from a mum and dad, to a member of Group 4, and they say, to Andy Girling, hello from Ocean Village, hurry up, looking forward to seeing you at the finish, love, mum and dad. Also, PS, have you got your apple pies ready? I think that's clearly a family joke, so we'll see on that one. A message here to now save the children, and this comes from Neil Unit - Jones. So, Neil, he says, to save the children, and in particular to Andy Hindley, whose stubbly mug I have just seen on my TV. Welcome home, and well done on completing this fantastic voyage. And they will be in very, very shortly indeed. The last one I have right now is to Pause to Remember, and this one comes in from Sally and Sam. And they say basically, see you on your arrival, loves and kisses, Sally and Sam. They've also sent a message to Jim Barham, who I believe is a crew member on Pause to Remember, and they ask how the gout is. Again, I'm sure that'll be a topic of conversation for days to come. Just actually been handed the latest result, race results and expected arrival times. And currently the standings are in first place, Group 4. They have 84 miles now to the finish. Tsushima Way Warrior are second with 103 miles left. Concert 118, Save the Children 181, Commercial Union 182, so it's very, very close racing there. Next in predicted is Nuclear Electric at 209, Ocean Rover at 212, Global Teamwork at 213, 3Com at 215 miles, Heath Insured 2 at 217 miles, Motorola 218 miles, neck and neck with Pause to Remember at 218 miles, Courtauld International at 220, and Time and Tide in at, with 307 miles left to go. So the predicted arrival times, we are currently looking at very early tomorrow morning, beginning at 1:30 a.m. And obviously these can change hour by hour, so please do keep an eye on the arrival times. So yes, 1:30 a.m. in the morning, and that's British summertime for Group 4. Spanning down through the day to 6:15, which is when Courtaulds are due in. Interesting spate in the afternoon, it looks like. Between around 1:30 to about 4:30, there's about five boats in due in the middle of the pack. With Time and Tide currently due in, and this, as I said, could change at 5:15 a.m. on Thursday morning. Just to give you an update of the 1, 2, 3 currently, that's Group 4 in first place, Tsushima Wave Warrior in second, and Concert in third. As I said, everything can change, but please do keep an eye on the results as they come through, because hour by hour, the weather's going to change here, and obviously the run-in is going to be very, very tight, and we'll see who's first in. Good luck to everybody involved, and we're looking forward to seeing you back in Southampton.